everybody. Welcome to Try Not to Blink. We are live at the American Academy of Optometry. Woo-hoo! On the floor, getting ready and looking around us. Everything's getting put up. And of course, this is Try Not to Blink, a podcast about the ups and downs, the ins and outs, news, tips, and tricks of those who live the optometry lifestyle. We're right here. And we would, of course, like to thank our very generous sponsors, the people at Valley Contacts, who have made this podcast possible. Of course, they're makers of stellar gas-permeable contact lenses and the oh-so-incredible custom stable scleral lens. In case you're wondering, which I know you're not, who I am, my name is James Diem, and I'm from the East Coast, even though we're here in San Antonio. And, of course, I'm joined by the awesome Dr. Roy Habibi, who's from the West Coast. What's up?
We're here. 97th Annual Academy of Optometry. Oh, yeah, I said it right.
Yeah,
Academy of Optometry.
That's what it
in
is.
San Antonio. Our booth, for those who are not blessed enough to see it yet, is pretty rad.
It's badass.
It's
Let's just
super
say
cool.
it what it is. It is badass. This is a really cool booth.
I mean, what I think is extra special is you come down off these escalators and you're just like, boom, bright orange in
Try
your face right here. Don't miss us. Come by and say hi.
Yes.
And for those of you lucky enough, we're streaming live on Facebook.
Yeah, so.
So you'll never get to miss it.
That's right.
And see our faces. We have a really awesome first guest of our event. So it would be my honor to introduce Pat Caroline. Yeah. What's up? Say hi to us all.
Hello, everyone.
There you go. Very good. So he heard we had a booth, and he had something else going on. He was going to be in another state, in another country, but he decided to change his plans and reorient everything so he can make this this appointment here with us today.
You bet.
Isn't that right?
Yep, something like that.
Super special. Well, why do we have Pat on our show today? Well, we are our episode today, our first at Academy, is only appropriate to be called the Scleral Lens Monarchs. And who better than you to join us? It's going to be a little series, but before we even dive into that, I've got a couple fun facts I want to share about Academy, actually.
Oh, okay.
I mean,
we are at Academy.
Makes sense. Everyone knows about it. Obviously, we know it's all about promoting vision through lifelong learning, and we have some of our brightest scientific advancements that are being announced at Academy.
Sure.
But do you know when the first meeting was?
Well, you said 97 years ago, and if I could do math quickly, I would come up with the correct answer.
You're right,
but
1922. No. I gave that away really easy, didn't I?
Okay, put it in your calculator.
Right? Yeah,
you got to carry the one, subtract. Okay. But see, better question is, do you know where the first meeting was?
Oh, boy, no, I have no idea.
Give a guess, just for fun.
Washington, D.C.
What's your guess?
I'm going to say San Diego.
No. No.
I have no idea.
St. Louis.
St. Louis,
oh,
okay.
That makes sense.
Yeah. All right.
Makes
better question,
sense.
Where is the most common location for an Academy meeting?
Okay, that one could be Chicago.
Hmm. How about Dallas? I have no idea.
Bingo.
Chicago.
Oh,
okay. Bingo. And do you know how many times? This is actually crazy. So obviously we know there's 97 events.
Yeah.
How many times has it been in Chicago?
Oh, boy. I would say probably at least 38.
38 times.
That's aggressive. That seems aggressive.
Yeah.
He's saying that because he's been to 38 of them in Chicago.
Exactly. What do you think?
I'm going to say 15. I've
19.
Wow.
That's
a lot of deep dish pizza.
Next most common location is 5.
Okay.
Really?
19 times in Chicago, 5 times is the next highest place. And just for fun, like, what is that place?
Orlando, Florida.
I like that guess. Do you have any?
No, I don't.
Okay, I'm going to just go ahead and say Boston.
Boston.
Oh,
yeah. Okay.
Yeah,
yep. We were just there a couple years
ago,
right?
Yep.
Boston, a couple other big runners were Philadelphia,
yep.
New York City.
New York, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Those are all the two that come in mind. But yeah, otherwise, I guess centrally
That's
located.
Cool.
I know, kind of interesting facts there. Right?
You've been to lots of meetings, right?
So, oh, yeah.
You know, is there a place that you'd say, you know, this is my favorite place to do a meeting? Like,
oh, you know, I worked in Boston for about 3 years of my life.
Right.
And just fell in love with that area.
Boston's an awesome town.
It's awesome.
Oh, yeah.
But then again, you know, New Orleans, San Francisco.
Ooh, yes. New Orleans. Oh, I've been to New Orleans with some of the people right around here, actually, some stories. Good, excellent. So, yeah, so that's Academy. We're here. We're rocking it. What else we got, Raya? What's going on?
So, I want to we're just all, like, overindulged with eye stuff right now. But I don't know about you, and especially important for you right now, or you're feeling it like me, but daylight savings time just struck, right? Plus, we're West Coasters in the central time zone early in the morning. We don't like that. Are you a morning person?
Yeah, I am. I'm up at about 3 a.m. every morning.
Yeah. Burning the midnight oil in the morning.
I could gladly go to bed at 3 a.m.
Early to rise, they say, right? Keeps a man healthy, wealthy, and wise.
It's the great time to get all the writing done, reading done. It's incredible.
I have heard that some of the most intelligent people are morning people. That makes sense, obviously.
Yeah.
I've tried it. It hasn't, you know, made me any more intelligent.
You have to just be it. Like, it just has to be a natural thing.
Yep.
But anyways, I want to just kind of touch on daylight savings time because I've had this like ultra passion that I hate daylight savings time for a long time because I guess that's wrong. I love daylight saving time only. Like, I don't like to fall back.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Right? I just want to keep it always daylight saving.
Yes.
Okay. I'll bring that up to Congress.
Will you?
Next time I'm there.
Right?
Did you vote?
Yeah. Oh, sure did. Yeah.
Did you get a sticker?
No, I didn't get
sticker. Then you actually didn't vote.
Proof. Well, proof.
You didn't get a sticker.
I didn't get a sticker.
I'm just kidding.
Do you know why?
What?
Because we have mail-in ballots in Oregon.
You know, I don't know why the mail-in ones don't give you the sticker, too. Because in Washington State, we do, too.
Yes.
I didn't get
That's
my sticker
I
either.
Yeah.
I almost wanted to just go in so I could get a sticker.
It's not off color, but it's a little bit off color. She's holding her breath.
Tangents.
Yeah. So, you know, the little stickers, everybody's posting them on Facebook. I saw somebody one, and it was like the same font and color, and it said, I farted instead of I voted. And it was just, I don't know, it really hit me in like right there. It was hilarious.
Well, there you go. The podcast is now complete.
Right, done. End session.
Jimmy hit the high note.
For real,
there.
Though,
it was,
actually,
it was
this year,
Sorry.
Did you know that Florida is voting on a bill to pass? To keep daylight saving time.
Is that right?
They just voted on it. Yep.
Yep.
I know.
Do we know what happened?
What's the other state that does that?
Well, Arizona, we know, obviously.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
And actually, Californians are voting on a proposition to also keep it.
Yep.
Obviously, because why would the Sunshine State not do
very
that?
Very cool.
Yeah. Well, so here, really fun question. We all know why, like, everyone's like heard of reasons why we do daylight saving time, right? Like, everyone's heard like farming, right?
Right.
Or like Ben Franklin started
it. I didn't know
it.
That. I
don't know. I feel
reasons.
Like everyone blames farmers, but
really,
I don't. That's what I've always heard. But that's not true. Actually, did you know that pre 1902, this British dude is like riding on a horse, and he decides that like, why do we waste daylight? Why aren't we up during daylight? Let's just like change the times by 1 hour so that we all get up at daylight.
Makes sense.
He tries to pitch it to British Parliament. They are like, nah, no.
Oh, tea.
After he dies, I know, right? After he dies, right around World War I, Germany remembers this like big pitch that he had gone through. And they were like, you know, this is practical considering we're in war times. Let's save a little energy, save a little fuel and whatnot.
Yeah.
And let's implement this. So they did. After Germany did, almost all of Europe did. And U.S. joined the game. When that happened, coincidentally, golf ball sales rose like hugely because obviously you have more time to play outside.
Good for the economy.
Movie industry though hated it, which is super.
Really?
Obviously,
okay, I guess that makes sense.
Be
outside. Not going out late at
night. And actually, the farmers disliked it so much that they almost rebelled, and that's why Congress was like, "Okay, we'll stop. We'll go back after World War I." Okay, now World War II comes. Roosevelt is like, we need to do this again, so let's do it. Okay, so they started again during World War II. And then after the war, they decide, you know, we're going to actually stop it again because, fast forward, so World War II happens, they do it. then it became a free-for-all, okay? Because some cities were like, we'll keep it.
Whatever
and then
you
some
want.
People were like, no, this is confusing.
Boy, yeah.
So people just chose whatever they wanted. And there's actually some funny stories, even from like the New York Times, how rural places would not know the time and go into New York and miss things that they had to go to because their time was off. So then Lyndon B. Johnson signs in the Uniform Time Act in 1966, saying states, you need to decide yes, no, are you in or out? It's a six-month on-off thing. And then Arizona, that's when they were like, nah, we're not doing this. Why did Arizona not do it? Because it's hot AF in the summer there. Why would they add an extra hour of that time?
That means very hot for all our non-millennial listeners.
Anyways, Nixon tried to push for a all-time daylight saving time.
Right.
Okay. But actually, they were like, no, kids are going to get hit by cars at night. So let's not do that.
That would be a bad consequence.
Anyways, now 2007, they've put 8 months daylight saving time to not. And that's where we're at now. Kind of interesting. Fun fact. That's what.
No kidding. That's a fun fact.
I know. I thought it was fascinating. I thought everyone needs to know.
You could, you know, share that information with all your students.
Yeah, and you heard it here first.
That's right. Yeah, no one else ever knew that.
Not in history at all.
Yes. Good. Well, now that was our hashtag non-OD topic.
Had to set the record straight.
Hashtag non-OD topic. Yes.
All right.
So, yeah, go ahead. Let's do it. We're going to jump right into our nuts and bolts our discussion here, meat and potatoes, if you will, with our scleral lens monarch. And few names in the contact lens industry are more well known than, of course, you. And so, you know, we thought a scleral lens monarch would be a great way to title this podcast, and certainly a title that you deserve. So there's really pillars in our mind regarding people who've led the change on shaping our current practice patterns in regards to custom contact lenses and contact lens experts. We hope to allow our listeners, of course, through this podcast to get to know you and some other monarchs a little bit better. So let's get to know you right now. So you're an associate professor.
That's great.
At the Pacific University. How long have you been there?
22 years.
What?
Excellent.
Yeah. Long time.
Fantastic.
Are you the longest?
Let's see. I'm the second oldest on the faculty. Let's put it that way. There's only one person older.
All right.
So,
I like it.
So getting up there.
Well, hey.
Second
feeling
best.
Good, though. Feeling good.
There you go.
I've seen this and heard this in academia. Have you taken on more? Or are you phasing lower, higher, same? Like, and you don't have to answer that if you don't want.
No, it's easy. I'm busier than I've ever been in my life.
That's what it seems like.
Obviously at the age of retirement now, but, you know, they're going to drag my body,
did you hear
body
that, Pacific?
Out of the building.
Don't even ask.
Yeah. Don't give them any more raises.
Is work fun
there
for you?
Forever.
What's is that? Work fun? Is work like?
Oh my god! You know, working with 100 new students a year.
That's
oh
awesome.
My god!
So fun.
Died and gone to heaven.
Aww,
this is what heaven has to be.
Aww.
Pacific University.
You're just never like you die and keep working.
Oh my!
You never.
God.
Your afterlife
that's
will continue.
That's what's going to be the worst part of dying. Is I won't be able to go into work anymore.
Aww,
so
you heard it there.
Yeah. It's crazy. But we've got such a great team at the university, great leadership with our three deans. We couldn't be happier.
Awesome. So, and you're a fellow member and a diplomate of the cornea and contact lens section of the academy.
That is correct.
Is that correct? Yes.
Yeah. Diplomate process is a fun process, but it's a heck of a lot of work.
Are you part of the acceptance committee for that now? Is that something that you're involved with at all?
In the past, I was involved in some of the testing and so on, but not anymore.
Okay, cool. Is it something you'd recommend people do? What's the difference, real quick? Let's not go into too much detail. Difference between fellowship and diplomate? Like, why would one want to do one versus the other?
The diplomate is sort of a self-service thing where you want to reach a specific level in your life, and the diplomate is perhaps the highest level in contact lenses, and so it's pretty special.
Cool.
Pretty special for all those that have it.
All right. Do you get a pin?
You get a pin, and then that's it. A little lapel pin.
Really, what else do you need?
No.
I mean, a pin, maybe a certificate?
Yep.
That you need to frame yourself.
Yeah. Oh, boy,
then,
yeah.
Then now we're really talking, you know, getting to the higher echelons.
Yeah.
Perfect. So, and really, you know, this is not something we're not, you know, just blowing smoke. You're an internationally recognized lecturer, researcher on contact lenses. We were talking a little bit before. You have a lecture in half hour, an hour here, right? So you didn't just come to see us. You're lecturing here at Academy?
That is correct.
Awesome.
Yeah, we have a lecture later on this afternoon.
And generally speaking, what topics do you normally hit on when you're lecturing?
You know, we're our level of interest as far as contact lenses, really anything in contact lenses.
Yeah.
Other sort of focus in on myopia control, scleral lenses, corneal contact lenses, and we at Pacific kind of like to do it all.
Yeah.
We have our hands in a lot of different areas of research.
You got your hands in all the cookie jars.
I think
that's
so.
Good.
I think so.
That's, I think, a good idea. Keep on the edge of things.
Yeah.
When, you know, you brought it up, so I'm going to say it here. The fact that, you know, Pacific really holds some level of respect, you know, and in big part, you and your colleagues in the contact lens department have brought that level of respect. And I think, you know, for our listeners, especially younger listeners that are in school and thinking about residency and that, you know, I think they know that the Pacific residency is a really tough one to get into. And, you know, so...
Yeah.
What do you think about that? Is that true? Is that myth?
Well, there is one
legend?
Spot, right? Hey,
there is one spot, but we're very lucky. We've got a very special team of people: Beth Kinoshita, Matt Lampa, Mark Andre, Randy Kojima.
Absolutely,
some of those are former residents, right?
Yes,
a lot of them are.
Yeah, two of them are former residents,
yeah.
And. You know, we're just blessed. We've been very, very lucky to have the team we've got. Everyone supporting everyone, and
it's such a great group to talk to. I mean, you guys all really are quite like family. I feel
it is family.
I had the honor of interviewing with you all back in the day, and I remember feeling such a collegial, kind.
Yeah.
Very down to earth.
Very
group.
Special team. So.
Absolutely.
One piece of advice: somebody looking to, you know, come in there as a resident. What would you say?
Just have that passion for contact lenses. Just that's, I think, the thing we look for most in our residents. We want our residents to be an integral part of the contact lens field, and you know, so it means a lot to us to
be excited.
Be excited about
sure.
it.
Sure. Yeah. Cool. Well, now that we've delved into some serious things, we're going to delve into some not-so-serious things and talk a little bit about you.
Yeah, little segment we like to do to break up the busy talk, the business talk.
That's right.
Okay. And we need everyone to know the real you, okay? So get ready. This is like a rapid-fire session here.
Great.
Yeah. And the longer you think, the more we'll judge you, okay?
Okay.
So, question one, scotch or whiskey?
Whiskey.
Okay, all right.
Pizza or chicken wings?
Chicken wings, no doubt about it.
Flavor chicken wings.
Yeah, need to know.
Buffalo.
Blue cheese or ranch?
Oh, good
both.
Question. Oh, yeah.
My man.
Yeah.
We just became best friends. Blue cheese and ranch. Love
it. I don't know about that.
Both.
Ranch only for me,
woo!
But that's okay.
Love it.
I won't judge you for that one. Okay, I've heard, and we might touch on this later, but I've heard you have a solid jukebox collection, okay?
That is correct.
But I want to know, more importantly, what's your go-to, like, let's get this party started song? Like,
oh boy,
not have to think about it. Like, I'm going to start this song and everyone's going to
start waving
tapping
the hair
their
around.
Feet.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, I'm a classic rock junkie.
Yes.
Perfect.
And so I'm a Zeppelin fan.
Yes.
Jethro
song.
Jethro Tull.
Yes.
Beatles, you know.
Give me your one song.
My one song.
Go
oh,
to.
Boy. A Day in the Life of by the Beatles.
And then sing it?
Yeah. No, that one I can't.
Well, then you stole my next question. I was going to say, what's your favorite Beatles song?
Yeah.
Would you say that's your favorite? Or would you
I
say?
Think so. You know, or that or Norwegian Wood. You know, I just.
Great.
How do you. How do you select?
That's tough.
That portfolio
is
just
crazy. Yeah.
Insane.
We could go on that whole topic on that. But this is a fun one. I want to know the creature, okay, that encapsulates who you are as a person and what we like to call your spirit animal.
Something we ask everybody.
You know, I think it's probably a cap. You know, I'm pretty mellow.
Yeah.
But then when I get a little excited,
you're there.
Probably best not to be around.
Ooh, yeah. Like you know, that's. I think it's the first time a guest has ever said a cat.
Yeah.
I've actually, my spirit animal is a barn cat.
Yeah.
A barn cat, because they're especially
a little feisty.
You just don't know what they're going to do sometimes, you know, and they definitely just kind of on their own page. So I appreciate that. Very good. We've already talked a little bit about location and you know, where you'd like to go to meetings. But what about travel and trips, leisure? If you could go somewhere, where would you want to go?
Favorite city in the world.
Yeah,
that's real easy. It's Forest Grove, Oregon. I've traveled, like many of your folks that have come in, my entire life.
Yep.
I've lectured on every continent, been in pretty much every major city in the world.
That's awesome.
And for me right now, I long for the day when I could just be home with my wife. And just the two of us and... For me, that's my vacation.
There's something to be said for that. Do you have any kids?
Two kids.
What age?
Two kids. They're in their early 30s.
I wonder if they're our age. Yeah. Fantastic. Yeah. What are they up to, if you don't mind me asking?
Oh, they're both working, very successful.
Wonderful.
Real happy with them. They're cool.
Happy lives.
Grandkids,
happy lives, happy dad.
Yeah, my wife had some grandchildren.
Oh, wonderful.
Five of the rascals.
Wow. So five little rascals.
I'm up to my eyebrows with grandkids.
There you go.
Nothing better than that.
Do they call you Grandpa? Or
no, they call me Pat.
Cool.
They call me Pat. Grandpa's, I'm not a grandpa.
When you become one, would you be like a pappy? Or would you be
Pat kind of sounds like Pap.
I thought he said Pat.
I think Pat's. Just fun.
Pat?
I like it.
All right.
I like it. Yeah,
I
do.
Dig that.
Yeah. I think it's good.
When was the last time you used a radioscope?
A radioscope?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I use it all the time.
He's like, I had one this morning. I brought it in my carry-on.
Never know when you'll need it.
Slapped a GP in there, got it all dialed in, we're ready to go.
Now, we don't have to use it very often because we get our lenses from Valley, and they're always perfect.
Check, Valley, check.
Okay, we have this next thing that we do. It's one of our little segments. We call it the Cell Pod
Hashtag
of the day.
Okay.
Which means scleral lens pearl of the day. So we usually talk about a quick pearl that we give our listeners. So things we've used in the past or we talked about in the past would be incorporating toric peripheries in the landing zone.
Yeah.
Accepting small imperfections, at least for a trial, right?
Oh, yeah.
Considering scleral lenses for patients with nystagmus was another one we talked about.
Yeah.
But, like, what's a small pearl that a lot of people just overlook that you could share with our
listeners?
This
is going to go down in infamy as your cell pod.
Whoa,
so,
yes.
You know, you only have 10 seconds to think about it, but it's going to be carried for you forever.
You know, I think probably the greatest frustration for practitioners is debris on the lenses. You know, we've got the hydropeg treatments and things like that, and we're still feeling our way through those. So that's probably one. And then the other area of major research for us right now is the increase in intraocular pressure while wearing a scleral lens.
Interesting.
So that one's been kind of obsessing us for a number of years now.
Absolutely.
So let me just ask you in reference to that then so we could tie it into a hashtag cell pod. What do you say to people in reference to concerns with glaucoma and eye pressure? So, you know, what do you do?
Well, our first study on this was done on 28 normal eyes, and 11 out of the 28 had IOP increases of greater than 10 millimeters of mercury, and this was on normal eyes.
Interesting.
So now our next phase of our study is going to be to measure blood perfusion to the optic nerve.
Interesting.
And we think that that's going to be a better way to pick up these subtle changes.
Absolutely.
And then once we pick up these changes, and we're just going to have to modify our lens designs appropriately and relieve the pressure.
Sure. Do you think actually different diameter lenses would maybe make it more or less?
No, our first study was actually done on 15 millimeter lenses.
Sure.
With smaller diameter lenses, and there, on average, we picked up 7 millimeters of mercury increase.
Interesting. And so, then larger diameter. In my mind, I would think a larger diameter would have a less increase.
Because you're getting away from the structures.
Yeah. We don't know if it's the actual pressure underneath it or whether we're actually landing on the anatomical structures,
absolutely,
the Schlemm's canal, trabecular meshwork.
Absolutely.
Right?
So my one question there, and I will stop badgering you about this, is how do you measure the pressure?
Yeah.
From what I remember in this topic, that's a limiting factor.
It is. It's a tricky factor. Now, in the past, we've used an instrument called the diaton.
Yes.
And that is measuring the IOP through the upper lid.
Uh-huh.
And with the individual gazing down slightly. Our new technique is going to be using OCT imaging, where we're able to monitor blood perfusion to both the choroid and the optic nerve.
So OCTA you're going to be using.
Yep.
Yeah, OCTA.
I bet you Diatom is here today, actually.
Yeah, they're here.
I bet they're here.
They're right here. They're right over there by the Schiot's tenometer.
Yes.
Right next to them.
You can't miss them.
Bad.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
All righty.
Yeah, useless.
So, let's see here. For those who skip on a residency, whether they decide not to do it or they don't get into one that they like, what are some learning curves that you see different residents go through, especially in fitting different custom lenses?
Boy, I think the main thing we have to concentrate on at the university level is making sure they get corneal GP experience.
Yeah.
So much of today's residency programs have been dominated by scleral lenses.
Absolutely.
That the corneal contact lenses are relegated to very much a back seat.
Yeah.
So we have to make
sure. It really more is an art, almost.
Yeah, we have to make sure our residents get that exposure. And so we're pretty diligent about that. We feel pretty confident they're getting good experiences with that.
You know, it's an interesting topic you bring up, and I think it's a hotly debated one, actually, too. You know, I think there's a lot of older practitioners, and I'm, you know, just you said how long you've been in practice.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're a more mature practitioner. There's newer practitioners coming in, and some of them have a little bit of experience, but certainly nobody has the evolutionary experience that you have,
mm-hmm,
with gas perms and then more into sclerals now. So, you know, just by a fact of your evolution to this point in life, you have this robust experience in the benefits of GPs.
Yeah.
You know, and I think, you know, just coming from my own perspective and speaking to other doctors that would have been, you know, sort of like your track, you know, there's a very different approach to scleral lenses. And it's a little bit of a hotly contested topic, you know?
It is.
Should we reserve scleral lenses for the train wrecks that fail the gas perm? Or can we, you know, jump right into that because of all of the obvious benefits of a scleral, that they stabilize well and they give
feel
really good comfort and,
yeah,
you know, all of those things. So what is your general approach to that? And, you know that I'm judging you as you say it.
Yeah, you bring up a really interesting question. Let's put it this way. I've got a 22-year-old patient in the chair with keratoconus.
Right.
This individual is going to need to wear contact lenses for many years to come. I know that if I put him in a scleral lens, there's a very good chance that he's going to have 10 millimeter mercury increase in his IOP while he's wearing that contact lens. That increase starts the second the scleral lens goes on the eye. The second we remove it, it goes back down to normal IOP. Now, what do I ethically do knowing that we're going to increase IOP by that much in that child or young adult? It's an interesting dilemma we face.
Well, especially nowadays with more normal eyes being fit with scleral lenses,
Yes, this is an ethical question the industry needs to ask itself.
Sure.
And therefore, we need better techniques for monitoring IOP to find out who these patients were. We had one subject in our study, normal-eyed subject, that had an 18-millimeter increase in IOP over an 8-hour period.
So would you say this is the greatest risk that you see as a potential?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. No doubt about it.
Because I think people think, well, you know, corneal edema, neovascularization, you know, these type microbial keratitis.
Those are trivial events.
Okay.
You can fix them most of the time, I guess.
Yeah, sort of.
We can. We got very good control now over these lenses.
So,
it's an interesting dilemma, but it's one we'll solve.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
The contact lens industry is just filled with incredibly bright people. So I'm not worried about it one bit.
Good.
The industry is going to figure it out. We'll fix it. And
I'm going to be honest. I'm glad people like yourself are doing all this work so I can just do. Right?
Yeah.
I can just use your information and I can just filter it into my patients. You guys are thinking of the questions and doing it. Maybe if I have any interesting thoughts, I'll send them your way.
You
can do the work for me. You can dig, and then I'll just practice and help.
That's good stuff.
So, kind of touching on that point, there's been a lot of changes in, particularly in the scleral lens industry, but just in contacts in general over the past 10, 15 years or so, I'd say.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think some of the tipping points were into changing, I mean, particularly scleral lenses, to going from a last resort to now oftentimes a first lens pulled for patients? Would you say it's lab production, cost, training? I mean, what do you think some of the biggest things for that were?
Oh, I think the thing that frustrates me most about sclerals is the fact that we didn't come across this earlier.
True.
The thing that held us back for so many years were the materials.
Yeah. Okay,
getting the high decay materials and the 17-millimeter buttons
mm-hmm.
that could be made into sclerals. Once that happened, the floodgates opened up. The new modality emerged. And I'd never seen anything take over the industry like scleral lenses have.
It's at every
soft
meeting,
lenses
it's,
were
it's everywhere.
Much slower.
Really?
When they were introduced. Yep. In 1971, the first soft lens was introduced in the United States, and it took 10, 15 years before they became kind of the mainstream.
Is it Wesley Jensen? Was that the first?
No, Bausch & Lomb.
Bausch & Lomb
had
the first
It was
one.
Bausch &
okay.
Lomb. We're the first with the C-series lens.
Okay.
Yeah, if you want a historical question answered.
You're the guy.
I'm the guy.
Which segues nicely into another topic. So you have a passion, which is the contact lens museum, you said?
That is it.
Okay. Where is this?
It is in Forest Grove.
Okay, I thought you were going to say your basement.
In his basement.
Hold it now.
That's interesting.
Right now it is.
He's actually stolen everything, and there's a heist.
We just signed the papers for the new property.
Cool.
It's going to be right across the street from the university.
Awesome.
It's going to be called the Contact Lens Museum.
I like that.
And it's
capital
an
V?
Exciting place. Yeah.
Just kidding.
Yeah, right. And it's going to be exciting to finally get this.
What are some of the coolest one or two, like, coolest things that you think are there?
Well, we have the largest collection of glass contact lenses in the world that were manufactured from about 1900 to 1940.
Interesting.
And then we have about 120 lenses that were made by Joseph Dallos in England, the father of the scleral lens, really.
Okay. Those old diagrams we see of people blowing glass to make.
Yes, yes.
Do you have the glass blower, too?
We don't have a glass blower, but we've got the glass molding apparatus.
Right.
No, he carves
it by hand, I think.
We have the only remaining glass contact lens manufacturing unit in the world.
Really?
So it's the only one left. I picked that up on a visit to Perth, Australia.
Interesting.
And it was the only one left on the planet. So
crikey!
Came back with me.
So. Put another shrimp on the barbie.
Yeah. No.
Too much.
So traditional.
Too much.
Over the line.
Never enough.
That's right.
Okay.
But, some real incredible treasures.
Well, folks, you'll have to check the Contact Lens Museum out. Yeah. When's it opening?
You need an Instagram.
It's going to be opening up in February of 2019 is going to be the grand opening.
Well, that will be your debut exciting. For Instagram. You're going to now download that.
Oh, there we go.
Ready to rock
start promoting it.
Yeah.
So, just so everybody knows, Pat's not on any social media. So right after this, we're going to actually hook up his Facebook, his Twitter, and his Instagram accounts. And his first post is going to be us.
You're all going to get flooded with a bunch of selfies from Pat.
It's going to be fantastic. So make sure you like, follow, share everything this man does. So, you know, one kind of other interesting thing I think about you is that you are not an OD. You're a COT.
That's correct. Not an OD, and
proud of it.
Well, probably never will be at this point. But
is that something you've thought about? Is it? I mean, not that it need to be or had to be. Or obviously,
I think both Craig Norman and I went to the ophthalmic technician school together. This was in 19.
At the same time?
Yeah, we were in the same class. It was a class of 15.
Did you cheat off each other's homework or anything like that?
No, you would not want to cheat off either one of our, because we, the two of us graduated the absolute last in the class.
Someone has to be that.
Yeah, someone had to be it.
That's true. That was very honorable. That
they still call him a COT.
Look at you now.
There you go.
Yeah. That's like the standard story. The C students can still do well. Look at them.
Well, the D students can still do well.
The scleral lens monarchs are the D students.
What made you do that? What made you go there? What was going on? Why?
It was very simple. I was working as an orderly in the hospital in the burn unit at St. Paul Ramsey Hospital in the Twin Cities.
Okay.
And I heard about this program that you could get into with nothing but a high school diploma.
Okay.
And that's how I got in. Craig got in a little different. He got in through the military. He had served in Vietnam.
Okay.
And so they had these paramedic things set up for individuals coming out of the military, and that was Craig.
Wow.
Awesome.
So, but I was the only one in the class that was not affiliated with the military.
Interesting.
Wow. Well, cool. So, thanks for sharing that. That, I think, is just a lot of people, see your name and on different lectures and like, this guy's not even an optometrist. What the hell does he know?
No,
and then you talk and it's like, you wrote the books. Yeah. Okay, I get it. You know everything.
COTs, contact lens fitting COTs are kind of a dying breed, to be honest.
They are.
At my clinic in Seattle, Washington, I have a COT her name is Doris Cortezi. She is a chief, especially at Cornell GPs.
Oh,
I mean, she kills it. She
even
we have a little contact lens. Yeah, she designs her own contact lens.
Changing
all her edges.
Minus,
she started to teach me how to understand
impressive.
The backside of a Cornell GP with her
finger. The backside. That's what
you're
I always
right.
Man, I'm like
you're
learning
right.
all these things from her.
Definitely a dying breed.
It is, but still a necessary thing. There, she's helped me kind of troubleshoot a lot of weird things that happen, especially on the backside of a Cornell GP that I just don't. It's hard to understand, but to kind of go back to that, I want to know kind of through history, what are some patients that stand out or click cases, whatever, that stand out in your mind for for instance, give topic one, hardest patient that you ever worked with?
Oh, that's an easy one.
Yes.
It is a woman with keratoconus. Had a corneal transplant, and all we had at the time was corneal contact lenses.
Sure.
Life has changed dramatically for the contact lens fitter. If we didn't have scleral lenses today, our lives would be much more miserable. Our patients' lives would be much more miserable. They have revolutionized the delivery of contact lenses for the pathologic eye.
Absolutely.
No doubt about it. And therefore, they're not going anywhere. They are here to stay.
Oh, yeah.
Any problems that develop, we're going to have to figure out.
Just dealing with
it. Oh, yeah.
We're going to have to deal
with it. Oh, yeah. They're too good to give up.
Too good to give up.
Yeah.
What about maybe your most rewarding case you ever worked on?
I think, most of those tend to be the alkali burns, chemical burns, patients who are, destined to go blind until we can intervene with a scleral lens.
Absolutely.
So I think for most clinicians, they would say it's their patients with ocular surface disease.
Uh-huh. Yeah, absolutely.
Pemphigoid, Stevens-Johnson.
Yep.
These are life-changing
experiences.
It's it's always a weird feeling for myself when I hold the scleral lens on the plunger and I'm ready to apply it to their eye. And I'm thinking in my head, you have no idea how this is going to change your life.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, for you right now, you're sitting there, and this is not a major event, but trust me, you will remember this second.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think it's fun when patients like that come through the door, and they're not even expecting me to even bring up scleral. Right. They're coming in for... I'll see a patient for a plug fell out.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm in a big group practice.
Yeah.
And they've been just having all these patchwork things done.
Oh, boy.
So they come into me on, like, an urgent basis, and I'm like, what is going on?
Yeah.
I feel like I'm a mom, like, breaking up a fight. Like, what are you guys doing?
Yeah.
Like, I need to fix this.
Yeah.
And then I just, like, rock the boat, put a lens in, and then, again, I get that feeling.
Yeah.
It's so fun. Like, and it's not even – those are, like, the easy people to fit.
Yeah,
which
are.
Is even more fun because they're so thankful. And you're just like, this is so obvious that I should – someone should have at least recommended you to do this.
It's always intriguing for me, and you'll want to do this, you guys. When you see a ophthalmology program, especially one related to dry eye, try to find an article or a lecture in there on scleral lenses.
Absolutely.
Today, maybe one.
It's starting to penetrate.
It's just barely starting to scratch the surface.
But, right.
And yet there is nothing on the planet Earth
that
works like normal saline solution trapped beneath a scleral lens.
Well, I tell patients, the worst thing to a dry eye is your lids rubbing on them.
Oh, boy, yeah.
There's literally nothing else that can fix that.
Yeah.
Except a scleral, kind of. I mean, or a tarsorrhaphy, which is not really functional.
Not easy to see through.
No. Unless you're maybe Superman.
Superman.
It's a bad look. Let's all agree on
that. Yeah, it's a bad look.
So, you bad look. One other topic that you mentioned earlier and I mentioned to you was your work with orthokeratology. And it's not something we talk a lot about, actually, on our show.
No,
not yet.
And, you know, I did a little Google search on you, you know, getting a little bit, you know, seeing if there was any dirt. And there's not. You're squeaky
clean.
So.
you're squeaky
clean, so that's good. But I did see that you're doing, I know you do a lot of orthokeratology work, but I also saw that you're consulting for something called Treehouse Eyes. Is that right?
Yeah,
Treehouse. Can you tell me a little bit about that? And
Treehouse was a company set up about 5 years ago, and it's a wonderful kind of concept. That is how to bring the delivery of myopia control optics to the public. And they've got now two clinics, both in the Washington, D.C. area, set up specifically for one thing only, and that is myopia control.
Cool.
Awesome.
So it's been a rather bold kind of experiment to see what the market is like out there for myopia control. And they've done a lot of wonderful demographic work to find out where these hot spots are.
Sure.
And as you can imagine, they're on the two coasts, the East Coast and the West Coast, where you have a larger Asian population.
Sure.
And for that reason, the topic is well known in the Asian culture
of
orthokeratology. So they have found, you know, the growth of that to be a little slow at first, but, man, it's picking up now.
That was going to be my next question. Yeah. How's it going?
It's going very, very good now.
Cool.
And I just think it takes a little while for this topic to find its way into the mainstream.
Now, everyone hears, like, you don't sleep in contacts, so you have to break that idea.
Yes.
And it's a hard contact. No one hears about that anymore, especially for kids. So it is a weird thing to
sometimes. It is a weird thing, but in the Asian culture,
it's not.
It's
right.
a very well-accepted modality, and it all emanates from their families in China. And in China, the China FDA, called the CFDA, actually has approved orthokeratology for children up to 5 diopters for myopia control.
Interesting.
But an interesting caveat to that is the CFDA will not allow anyone under the age of 18 to wear a soft contact lens.
What?
So that's their only option.
It's the only option.
Interesting.
So,
can you imagine if it was like that here?
Oh, my.
I mean, but it's actually, you know, it's maybe government overreach in some regards, but the intention, I think, is good, right? I mean, from a myopia control standpoint, right?
Yeah. You know, we do enjoy, though, having the multifocal optics on the front of the soft lenses. So we have that lovely luxury of having three really good ways to deliver the myopia control optics.
Right.
But I guess argue their point also, realistically, GP lenses are healthier for the eyes. They give the best optics.
That is correct.
Granted, would I trust, I don't have any kids, but would I trust my 7-year-old boy who's super active to not lose the lenses all the time?
Yeah.
Probably not.
Yeah, but in today's market with one-day product and the ability to put these optics onto a one-day product, you're seeing now today a lot of manufacturers like Cooper very much involved in the one-day myopia control market.
Yep.
Daily disposable products. So the future looks incredible.
Absolutely.
Oh,
do you have any insight onto why? I mean, we're kind of musing here why in China they do this, but is it just like communism?
No. It's really
the
water supply in most of these places is really quite suboptimal.
Okay.
So the washing hands. And the showering and things like that are a bit more of a concern. We're kind of blessed in this country with very stable water supplies throughout our country.
Awesome.
That's a great point. Well, this has been super fun talking to you. I don't want to say or use all your time here, I want to leave our listeners with one last maybe word of wisdom, whether it be their new fitters to contacts or basically like what's your Pat Caroline elevator pitch, word of wisdom here.
The word of wisdom is to go through your drawers in your office and send me anything related to the history of contact lenses.
Not your drawers, like your pants.
No, don't send me
He's
those.
He's not telling you that.
No. And but don't it is that. True. Each one of us has a cabinet that we've stored all this stuff in. And
that's not wisdom. We're trying to add to history.
No, seriously, that's great. If we can help you with that, our outreach, that would be really, really cool.
That would be so cool.
Any unused thing.
Yes. I want your hashtag, Pat Caroline, I want your old stuff.
Yes, I want anything old.
I want your old stuff.
Send it on by.
Awesome.
Fantastic.
Well, thank you so much again. And that about does it, of course. We want to remind everyone to check out our badass new website.
Really cool.
Thanks to Chris Tracewell, our creative genius. Check it out at trynottoblink.com. And what?
And Kelly.
Oh, and Kelly. Oh, please. My God. We have our social media manager.
Kelly, Kelly.
She's amazing.
Yeah. Kelly's our brand new social media guru, and she's here at our booth. And she really spearheaded that, so we want to give her credit.
She's also whipping Jimmy into shape, which has been really
brilliant.
Yeah,
she's yelling at me and being, very aggressive. And so I have to just kind of let her do her thing.
No,
But of course, we just have a great team, right? We got Chris, who's awesome, just a creative genius. And then, of course, Kelly, who's just implementing all this stuff on the social side. So we're very lucky.
We also have digits, people. Call us, text us, whatever.
Yeah.
Our number is 920-350-8622. Try not to blink.
That's right.
We want feedback, questions. Ask Cole stories.
Yeah, so somebody's asking you questions and you're just like, listen, ask Cole.
Anything you want us to talk about or questions, shout out to us. We'd love to incorporate that into a podcast. And obviously, we couldn't stop without saying huge thanks to our sponsors, Valley Contacts. Check out this awesome booth that we have. Come say hi to us and tune into our next episode. But until then, try not to blink.